Hello, and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week, we take one mechanic and try on its clothes for a while, see how they feel. My name is Sam Dunnewald, and my co-host today is Kate Hill. It's the second episode of the Dice Exploder series on LARP, and after last week's intro episode, I wanted to get into the mechanic or concept, whatever you want to call it, that I think many people understand as the core difference between tabletop games and LARP, and that is embodiment. Actually stepping up into your character's shoes, and not just talking the talk, because we do that all the time in Dungeons & Dragons, but walking the walk, moving through real space, putting on a costume. Or another way to put it, in a lot of games, to do something in the fictional world, you engage with abstraction. To pick someone's pocket, you describe picking their pocket, or you roll a die to see how well you pick it. But in a LARP, sometimes the action is the action. I pick your pocket by picking your pocket. And actually doing the thing completely changes how it feels to play. And to get into those changes, I am so pleased I got to talk with Kate Hill. Kate is a LARP designer and player. She helps organize the LARP Shack group in North Carolina. She was a judge for last year's Golden Cobra Challenge, and she's running games at Tapestries, a new Bay Area LARP convention coming up this April. She's also got an actual play, Path of Glory, hosted on the Twitch stream Life in Neon. She's not just a very smart and experienced LARPer, she's so infectiously enthusiastic, so great at the project of building community around games. And in this episode, we talked about how embodiment makes play feel emotionally bigger, more real, for better and for worse. And we're already seeing my LARP series fail at being about LARP because we also spent a lot of time talking about embodiment in tabletop games. There's so much of it there. We're just not talking about it. That's the secret. LARP and RPGs, they're not so different after all. One last thing before we dive in. Kate and I talk about a concept in here that I didn't properly explain in the moment, so I'm just going to do it right now. Playing to lift. This is the idea that if I play to support your character's story and you play to support mine, we're both going to have a better time because we're both lifting each other up and focusing on collaboration and the whole group having a good time. Okay, let's get into it. Here is Kate Hill with Physical Embodiment. Kate Hill, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Normally on this show, I have done the introduction, and now we're like diving into whatever mechanic we're fucking talking about today.
Right.
But in the LARP series here, I feel like I have had a little bit less context for the games in the medium, and so I've been more interested in kind of like digging into the background of interviewees. And so I'd love to start with like, it, for you, in your own words, what is your background as it pertains to LARP and gaming?
Yeah, so I've been doing tabletop RPGs for a very long time. Started at McAllister College and the Twin Cities. Shout out to Minnesota. And
we love Minnesota on this podcast.
Minnesota forever. And ended up just like falling in love with games of all kind there. We actually did a few LARPs that we didn't know were LARPs at McAllister.
Like what?
So my first ever LARP was my friend at McAllister being like, I have this idea that we're all going to be famous 1950s icons at a costume party, and we don't know who each other is, and we're going to be like figuring out weird Cold War stuff. It's like 15 of us, and I don't really know what we're doing, but I had this idea. Let's do it. It was basically, it was absolutely a LARP. We just didn't know what we were doing.
It's bleeding the line between party theme and LARP in an exciting way. Yeah.
So we did a few of those, and they were basically what I would call kind of like Golden Cobra freeform style LARPs, except none of us had vocabulary for that. And then I stopped doing it for a while. But then I dove back in with New World Magiscola, which is it was kind of one of the first big blockbuster LARPs in the United States in 2016. And I just got completely, like, I had been TTRPGing and doing indie gaming. I had gone really into indie RPGs at that point. It just hit me real hard. I was completely enraptured with the medium and kind of just dove in head first. I was really fortunate that I was already in a gaming group with Jason Morningstar and John Bolding and Clinton Dreisbach and a few other like really great early indie designers. And Jason and I kind of got really into LARPs around the same time. And so we were able to kind of work with each other and build up a little bit of a community here. So that's kind of how I got my start.
And is that LARP Shack?
That is LARP Shack.
I want to hear about LARP Shack as an institution.
Wow. Yeah. So I wish it was more of one at the moment. Let's just say that. So LARP Shack started right after that, like 2016. It is a group which we basically try to meet once a month, and we get together to play LARPs, and we don't always know what we're going to play. We tend to have different members come and bring things to pitch, and then we'll see how we're feeling at that time and kind of all talk together and choose a game. Therefore, it is very much games that you might think of, like LARPs as like these big costumey events in which you're like really in a location and it's like going for a weekend. But it's very much like, here's a game that runs an hour and a half to 2 hours and it requires no costuming and no prep. Jump right in.
Yeah.
We use it a lot as a playtesting space. So we like to help folks playtest their games that they're writing. And yeah, it's free. That's one of our biggest important parts about it is we try to make it as low barrier as possible. And it was doing really, really well before the pandemic. We went online for a few years, but a lot of small LARP groups like this have suffered a lot during the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we are actually the only one of the very few in this style currently standing.
Yeah. What size was it in January of 2020?
We would be regularly pulling in 15 to 20 people a month.
Mm-hmm. And how many people do you have now?
Eight.
Yeah.
8 to 10. Okay. So
it's like a large gaming group now.
Yeah. We're trying to rebuild it. We're holding our first event that we've had since the pandemic, in which people are coming out from out of town to play some games in a few weeks. I think we're going to hit 16 or 17 for that. So kind of getting us back there. But
yeah. Yeah. I myself have in the past year started going to this Story Games meetup in Burbank, California. That is really wonderful. It's like at a gaming store, people show up, then you pitch games, and we fire maybe three games or whatever at a time. And in the past like 4 months, 5 months maybe, it has finally started to pick back up from like a pretty small number of people. And it is clear that it's such a valuable institution. The work of keeping it going has been really hard. And the growth is just really, really hard to facilitate too. And so, yeah, I can't recommend trying to make a group like this yourself, listeners. And also, like, boy, will it probably be hard.
It's going to be hard, y'all. Folks, if you're out there listening and you're in the North Carolina area, feel free to come on down.
Having regular RPG community that is larger than a single gaming group is something I didn't know could exist and is so beautiful, and more people should be trying to build that out. I want to get into our main topic for today, which are we calling this embodiment? I think we're calling this embodiment, but maybe we're calling it props and costumes.
I'm talking about, I was looking at your questions. I've got some embodiment. I've got some props, costumes.
Yeah. I think basically what I want to talk about today is the main difference I see between tabletop and LARP. And that is that this is something Carol Murphy said to me in an email while setting up an interview with them coming up. But like in tabletop RPGs, mechanics are often representative of action. But in live experiences, often action represents action.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the idea that I want to dig into here. Like what happens to games when there's the mechanic is you literally do the thing. So I don't know, like, how do you think about this idea? What is exciting about this to you relative to tabletop games?
So I think that one of the areas that is exciting to me about it is that I do agree with you that I think that the factor of embodiment, physically acting out a thing and having that be the representation of what you're doing, is a pretty important distinction between the two. But I don't know if I would consider that like the full definition of what makes a LARP. And I definitely find it interesting to think about where did those lines blur?
Mm-hmm.
And what does embodiment bring to the experience? What does that experience of, be it whether you're acting out a role or doing an action to actually do it or putting on a costume, what does that bring to a scenario or a game? And is that even something possible that we would want to bring into a TTRPG, right? Like, is that, was like, nope, that's dumb. Or is that actually like a fruitful area of thought? And so I think that's what's most interesting to me about it, is thinking what that can bring to an experience and why someone would want to do that and bring that to an experience.
So why would someone want to bring that to an experience?
Yeah, well, I think for me anyway, so one, I'd say that a lot of tabletop RPG folks are already bringing some embodiment to their experience and action.
Yes.
Like, somehow I've entered into the world of actual play, and the group I'm doing is a bunch of LARPers and an actor. So we might be weird, but we like have special occasions in which we all fully costume.
Yeah.
For the Dungeons and Dragons game. And I don't think you need to do that for every tabletop game, but what it does bring is that feeling of more embodiment and focus on what does this character actually exist like in this world. It helps you, I think, break into a more like intense and visceral space. There's the idea of the magic circle, in which you kind of can let go of what's happening around you and enter into this shared narrative. And I think that embodiment, in whatever way you want to talk about it, is a kind of a shortcut into it.
For me, whenever I get my body involved in doing a thing, I feel the thing harder. I learn the thing more easily. Like, it becomes more real because it is real, not just for my brain, but for my body.
Right. Like, when your body is doing something, the mind doesn't really know that that's a different thing. Like, you're still doing those actions. And so it's basically a trick to make you start thinking as your character. So, and I think games have been doing this, like TTRPGs, there's no mechanics necessarily for it, right? Most people are not like, here's the mechanic of embodiment.
Right.
But when I ran a dungeon, maybe it's just because I'm a LARPer. But I wasn't at the time, so who knows? But when I was like running D&D in college, there was this incredibly intense scene that we were doing, and everyone we were in person, and we just all stood up and started doing it embodied.
Yeah.
And that made it so much more powerful. And that was a Dungeons and Dragons game. Like, and then we went back and we ran around the table and it was fine, but we had that like short period of time. And so I think that a lot of table RPGers already do it, at least from the head up, you know? And I think that encouraging it, providing a space for it to actually take place in a tabletop RPG game, building in some of that space of embodiment, even if it's in a very segmented way, can help, especially if you're doing a kind of game that does want to focus on inter-character, personal character development, first-person character experience. Like, it's not a thing you want to do for Microscope.
Right. Or, you know, Archipelago. Who would you even dress up as or act as in a game like that?
There's very much like those styles of games. You're like, no. But
yeah. And it's also, you know, in a more like elf game, dungeon crawly kind of style of play. Like, I often compare that style of play to like doing an escape room, where it is so much like your character is just sort of an avatar for yourself. And in that way, you know, I would get it if you showed up to an escape room in costume, but that would feel more out of place than showing up to a D&D game in costume, right? Because this sort of fundamental activity that you're doing is different. Yeah, it is the goal of the game to get in touch with the character's feelings of the like physical process of what's going on, or is it to like solve a little puzzle?
Right. So it's like always, again, thinking about like, what is my purpose here that I'm trying to facilitate? But if you're a designer or a person thinking about that, I think that the idea of looking at embodiment or props or costumes, honestly, I'd say costumes are kind of, I love them, but I feel like that is a big ask for a lot of people. But even just like a small prop or something like that, how can that help make everything feel a little bit more visceral, intense experience? Because as you said, then you're doing an action as an action, and that's going to connect to your brain, and that's going to just kind of make everything a little bit more focused in on the experience that you're doing.
Yeah. So here's an interesting example. Have you played Morningstar's game Holdu? Do you know about the Gnome Hats game?
Yes, I was the original playtester of Holdu.
Incredible.
Yes.
I believe I was the second. So here we are. Let's talk about Huldu for a second. Because I found the gnome hats mechanic in this game to be a really, really interesting way to kind of walk the line between traditional RPG mechanic and the kind of embodiment that we're talking about. So the way these gnome hats work is you get the game and the first thing you do in the game is you sew together a bunch of gnome hats. Like, that's the first step of playing the game. Arts and crafts time. And then everyone is playing these ancient gnomes from various point in history who have woken up and found that the world has changed around them and they're magical and doing gnome stuff. And the rule of the game is that you are only allowed to wear the gnome hats when you are doing gnome magic.
Right.
Which always gets you into trouble, or when you're talking to the human world, which always gets you into trouble. And so the thing that Jason wants you to do is get into trouble, and you are desperate to put on the gnome hat because it's a cool little hat that you made.
Yeah,
just love your little gnome hat. You want to put it on. And so you go out of your way to get into trouble so that you can put the gnome hat on. And it is like a mechanic that takes embodiment, like this costume, and like once you put it on, you feel more like a gnome, right? It's exactly the same thing that we're talking about. Like, oh, here we are. Well, I get to do my little gnome guy stuff now. Blah, blah, blah. And it's using the carrot of that embodiment as a like game mechanic to push you in the direction he wants to lead you in.
Yeah, that is one of the games that I was thinking of like an incredible example of the bleed of embodiment and how we can bring embodiment in as a mechanic. And I think that it's so clever to push you in a very specific direction because, as you said, like, one, everyone wants to wear a gnome hat. But in general, like, if there's a cool prop, if there's a cool thing, you're going to want to engage with that, right?
Yeah.
And so if you have to do something to engage with that cool thing, you're going to want to go after it. It's going to encourage that kind of play. Now, this is more of a turn-taking mechanism, but I think it's another interesting example of embodiment. In the game Bluebeard's Bride, there's the ring, and the ring gets passed between players when they want to be the embodied person. And I like to play it with a ring that you can resize so that people can actually put the ring on when they're playing the character. And I like to make the ring look really cool because then it really encourages you. Again, I want to put that ring on. That's a cool prop. I want to take that control. It gets people flowing the ring around more easily. And also you're feeling that weight of a person who is, you know, the Bluebeard's bride, who has just gone into this horrible marriage and is exploring her terrifying husband's house. That weight of that new commitment is now on you. You can't ignore it.
And it's also the responsibility of it, because that's a game where like all the players at the table are playing one character, the bride, all different aspects of her personality. And when you get the ring, you're in control.
You're the body, basically.
Yeah. And when you physically represent that, like you can physically feel the weight in your hand, even if it is slight of a ring, in the same way that you can feel everyone else looking at you because you're in the driver's seat.
Right. So I think that like those are some of my favorite examples of it, like of just even small things that you can do with that carrot, as you said, and that also gives you that feeling of, oh, now I am more connected to whatever type of feeling that you are trying to, as a designer, evoke, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bluebeard's Bride, I thought you were going to go for a different example from that game, actually, of Shiver and Fear move.
Oh, that one's great, too.
Yeah, which is a move where the like actual trigger for the move is you, as a player in real life, shiver in fear. And then like some mechanical stuff happens that instead of the carrot being the physical embodiment at the end of the mechanic, the embodiment is there at the front. It's the trigger. It's not something you're sort of actively pursuing or dealing with. It's pushing the rules forward. And that's a really interesting way to think about embodiment too.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that there's actually quite a few games that have been exploring using a proper embodiment in some way. Not as much. Some of them are not carrots. Like, I don't know if you know the game Threaded. I don't think it's out yet. It's been like in development for like since 2018.
Much like all of my games, yeah.
But Threaded is like, it's a one-shot game about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Oh, yeah.
And you are playing members of the people who are talking about if you should unionize and the different steps. And part of the game is that as you're doing that, you are sewing little scraps of fabric together and building something as you're working. And someone can give you a scrap as basically like, tell me more about what you want. And then you have to sew that into it. And that's also like a really beautiful example of embodiment, because as you're playing these characters, like, sure, some of it's out of game, right? With that, like, here's a piece of fabric, now we'll tell a scene. But a lot of it is that feeling of sewing. It's bringing you so into the space of that is what these people were doing day in and day out. And it's very visceral and powerful.
Yeah. I'm thinking about a lot of things. You know, I started this season of Dice Exploder on physical artifacts of play. And one of those episodes was about Two Hand Path, which is a game by Mikey Ham, in which you are a wizard running around in a post-apocalyptic landscape, just sort of killing demons. And you play the game by alternating between doing Yahtzee, just rolling dice. And then sometimes it'll ask you to pause, and your character sheet is a pair of hands that you color in. So you'll color in tattoos or whatever, like, or scars on the hands. Very cool game.
That's awesome.
But it has this, you know, feeling of embodiment even there in the act of drawing, right? You're creating this physical artifact of play. It feels, you know, it's a solo game. It's pretty low stakes. It's supposed to be a pretty, like, cartoony kind of game, but you still, it really changes how you feel as you play the game when the physical activity in front of you plays, right? When you get into drawing, you slow down, you start thinking about the past. It's like we've entered bullet time because we're in the middle of this like big fight, but now we're like doing this contemplative drawing. And similarly, like shaking them bones, like just throwing dice around feels kind of action-y, right? Like it feels like pop, 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 let's like fight the bad guys. And even D&D, without all the costumes and props, just like rolling dice around, has an aspect of embodiment to it that, you know, you should be aware of as a designer as you're doing it. Like, what does it feel like to physically do the thing of just rolling dice?
Yeah, I mean, we're always in our bodies. So, you know, we kind of have to consistently think about what that feels like. And I think that, you know, the big difference between like those kinds of things and in LARP is, as you said, is like the actions are all what you would be doing in character.
Yeah.
Because LARP is really all about action is action. My thought about it was also more like LARP is going to be just much more focused on first person than third person, right?
Totally.
It's like almost like a, in RPGs, you're going to be mostly in third person unless you're me, and then you're going to be at least half and half, unless you're playing with a bunch of LARPers or actors, which is pretty much what I do. But in LARP, you definitely can go into third person. So like a lot of people think like, oh, that's not allowed. There's a lot of LARPs in which you will pop back out to explain something you can't actually do in real life.
I did this last weekend. We were like on a yacht, and I went up to a guy and I said, I'm throwing you overboard. And he was like, no, like he responded like I had, as a character, just said to him, I'm throwing you overboard. And I was like, no. My character is attempting to bull rush you overboard. What do you think happens? And yeah, you can't, even in a game where you're 90%, 99% in person, some things you just can't do that with.
Yeah, you can't physically throw someone overboard. I mean, you probably could in some LARPs, but I feel like that would need to.
workshop that first.
Yeah. I'm sure there have been those. And there's a whole spectrum of LARPs in which this is like, what is a tabletop and what is a LARP? Like, I think the action is a really good idea part of it. I think that it's more first person than third person usually, but you're still going to have those moments. And there's going to be examples of games that honestly kind of bleed almost like 50-50 and people call them a LARP.
Totally.
So
I'm thinking about how the one-to-one action thing isn't sufficient in the other direction too, because I was thinking about this game, The Plastic Cup, which is
I know the plastic cup
which is a game in which my understanding of this game is that it's like a dysfunctional family at a will reading, And you're mostly just doing the LARP thing of sitting around talking to each other, but each player is also given 10 ceramic mugs that when they are feeling a strong emotion, they throw on the ground and smash. Mm-hmm. And that is like hyper embodiment, right? That like, because that's not a tabletop mechanic. Like, if on the one hand we have like you're rolling dice and that feels a certain way, but that's not the thing that your character is mm-hmm. doing. It feels very rules. And then you come out to like the action is the thing in LARP. It feels like pushing past that is like we're doing a thing that is like the melodrama heightened version of the one-to-one action mm-hmm. that we're doing in LARP when we're smashing the cup on the ground.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, in a county called Sublime, there was a child lost in the wood. Our Lives in the Wood is a horror actual play series exploring the tragic lives and stories of the citizens of Sublime County, orchestrated by one of the Stranger's most devious of servants, the writer. Witness the everyday lives of those lost within this terrible wood and glimpse the hope shining dimly in the dark. Enjoy tightly edited episodes with immersive sound design and a rotating cast of guests playing a wide variety of indie TTRPGs. Brought to you by Tales Yet Told, wherever you get your podcasts.
So we've listed a ton of like example mechanics. And it, well, no, I think that that's great. Like, I love a specific example, but I'm curious to get to more examples of the feeling uh-huh. that all these kinds of mechanics are producing. So would you describe for me a time when you felt really embodied because of a LARP experience
oh,
and
yeah.
like what that feeling felt like for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, some people will call this immersion. And if you ever look into a LARP world, just note that everyone will have their own definition of what immersion is and embodiment, and they will fight you over it.
Yeah. This is the does system matters of LARP.
This is the does system matters of LARP. 100%. But one of the big ones that stands out in my mind is it was actually the first ever big LARP I played, New World Magiscola. And my character, who was a professor of jurisprudence, had reunited as with another professor who was her long lost love, who she had accidentally gotten turned into a werewolf, and like a bunch of stuff going on there. And their whole game was like kind of trying to figure out if they still had feelings for each other and what was yeah. going to happen and all of that. But it was late at night. I was coming out of a class I was teaching, and I come down around and I see the character, the player who is playing my lover, doing a ritual in which he is trying to tame the wolf inside of him and like make balance with it. And the students are around him and he's on the ground writhing, and this all is chanting. And I see this and just run as fast as I can. And out of the corner of my eye, I see the other guy just standing watching, who's been our enemy the whole time, just watching this, shaking his head. And I felt at that moment just so fully in that character, so fully embodied in this scene in which all of these pieces were fitting together to create. Like, I felt that rush of fear, that rush of, I don't know if this is going to work out. Oh no, our enemy has seen us. What are we going to do? I need to be with my love. What's happening? It was all right there, absorbing you into that moment. And then actually we had another moment afterwards in which we all went to the woods and hunted some actual werewolves who were being bad, and we all became besties. And that was also a really, really excellent moment of embodiment that whole evening. And I think that that was like what sold me on LARP. Just that first experience of, oh my gosh, this is something that I've felt a lot of. I'm an actor. I do a lot of tabletop. I felt that kind of stuff before, but I have never felt it to this degree, right? This level of intensity.
It is really, really hard to convey to people who have not LARPed before just how real and strong the feelings that show up in LARP can be.
And I got hooked. I was like, absolutely. I love this. You can't, it's hard to describe, but it really is, as I said, that like breaking through into this other headspace temporarily. You never lose yourself, or I certainly try not to, but it is something very special that is very hard to find in other ways of being and playing.
What about it, other than the degree, is special to you?
So that's a really good question. There's a few things. One is the connections. I like to call, so a lot of people call LARP, and I agree, a shortcut to intimacy. And I am a person who doesn't like small talk. I like friends. I like having community. LARP is, when you play with a group of LARPers, you feel like you have formed connections that are maybe deeper than they actually are. Yeah. But it is a connection builder, almost faster. It has made people better friends. It just creates community in that way and connection almost more than I've ever seen. That can be problematic too, but it is also very special.
Yeah, I just want to call out that, like, for me, I completely agree. I think that it's because the act of LARPing requires such a big leap of trust right away. And the reason it can go so south is because people can abuse that trust.
Absolutely. You can abuse trust in any kind of situation, obviously. I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, LARP has so much community issues and things like that. And I don't know, I'm involved in leftist communities, and let me tell you, it's just everywhere. But I do think that's true. It is a huge act of trust that I am going to embody and be this person, and we are going to engage in this world together. And there is so much less alibi that you can't just jump back out and create some distance as much as you can in a tabletop game, right? Even if you're doing a first person scene in a tabletop game, it's pretty easy to go, okay, we're going to pull back now, and we're going to get out of this headspace, and we're just going to move into a third person narration or pull out a little bit. Whereas in LARP, you can do that. And I actually highly recommend doing it if you are feeling overwhelmed and you need to talk about things. That's good. That's safety. But it is not as much built into the process.
Yeah, so absolutely. Maybe that's an interesting place to talk about what I see as one of the other risks of, like, too much immersion, which maybe means too much embodiment. I feel like the strength of the experience sometimes can mean that you lose track of yourself, or more likely, I think, lose track of the other players in the game. Like, for me, I think it is rare that I'm losing track of Sam, but it has happened that I lose track of Kate, right? I'm very still aware of whoever Kate's character is, but, like, I stop playing to lift, right? I stop sort of thinking about what might other people want out of this experience and how can I support them, and get so wrapped up in, like, my own thing. And I think there are ways where, like, sometimes everyone else is playing to lift you into that perfect moment of immersion for you, right? Or sometimes, like, two people are really immersed in a scene, and, like, that's kind of the dream, I feel like, is, like, we get to both be there together and almost, like, lose ourselves and just be the characters and, like, see what happens with that. But, yeah, I think that losing that awareness is a risk here.
So, for me, I think that one of the good things to remember about chasing immersion or that type of experience is that it should always be temporary. And it's that, like, highlight, but that's not something you should be sustaining even for the whole game. And I think that in LARP, it's also way easier to do exactly what you're saying, because you are just focused on one character, and some LARPs are small. Some LARPs are 4 to 5 players, and it's like a tabletop in that size. Yeah. Some LARPs are 100 people. It's really easy to, like, not know the person beforehand that you even interact with and just see them as their character. And so it is much easier, I think, to kind of get focused in on yourself and your experience and not thinking about as much other people's experiences. And I think that this is why there's kind of that debate, right? Some people are saying, I play for immersion and that is what I want to do, or I play for embodiment, I play for those intense feelings, and I totally get that. I want to jump into that magic circle. I love that. Like, that's one of the things that brought me to LARP. But there's also the saying in a lot of LARP communities that I'm in, immersion is a false god.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly because of what you are saying there, is that if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, if you don't come in with the thought of, I need to pull myself out occasionally, I need to check in with my own mind and with other people,
mm-hmm.
you can get into that space. And I think that's why that statement exists. And that's sometimes why I say that statement, is because immersion is great, but not immersion to the point of hurting other people's play, hurting people's safety, or gatekeeping, right? That's kind of the key there is.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Like, you get rolling. I'm a person who prides myself, I admit, on kind of always being able to kind of separate those things and focusing. I think I probably get immersed less than a lot of other LARPers, maybe, because I started games facilitating / playing.
Yeah.
And so I've just never, I'm always in that like weird facilitator mindset, even when I'm playing. It's a tricky thing to balance. And I think that if you're LARPing, it's very good to take time and pull yourself back. Like, allow yourself to enjoy that moment, but then take a step back, breathe, and think.
I think you don't have to agree with this, and I hope people take this in the most generous possible read of it. But I think that there is a selfishness in that pursuit of immersion, right? It is about your mm-hmm. experience, mm-hmm. not about the collective's experience. And I think that, like, sometimes selfish things are good, right? Like, I do think that there is value and beauty in having that experience. But I think when you are playing exclusively for that and not playing for the chance for everyone here to get to have that experience, right? Like, when you're locking in entirely on your own immersion and not doing what you're saying of coming out sometimes and coming out often, then you're not thinking about your fellow human beings in the same way and taking care of people.
Players before game, always, right? Yeah. Players before yeah. characters, always. And maybe people will, again, I don't know, I might get in a flame war now. I can say you said it first. I do think it's fine to be selfish and chase a little bit of that high. Often you're chasing it with others, and that's great if you can build that together. You said, like, that ideal in which, like, you're all experiencing it in this space together. That's, like, the ideal, right? But I feel like people will sometimes chase it to the exclusion of story, or because to me, I guess it's similar to tabletop with LARP, but I think maybe because you're in a space that people can move around a bit more, you can create a little bit more side conversations. There's also a thing that happens in LARP that it's often a little bit more serendipitous tabletop. But we want to pay attention to that serendipity and that collective storytelling. And that's, to me, one of the beauties of LARP, is creating all of those little moments that we then build together into this cohesive whole. And we only can do that if we're paying attention to what other people need and how they're playing and weaving those things together into a whole. So basically,
totally.
I agree with you. Even though I might be thrown out of Nordic LARP forever. I don't know. I will say, yeah. I do think that
Nordic LARP canceled.
I will say, like, I've known players who are much more on that, like, this is what I want to chase. And they're still great. Like, they managed Absolutely. To do it. I don't want to be like, if you play for immersion, you're a bad person. Because that's
totally.
That is not,
totally.
Not the case.
Yeah, it's the playing for immersion at the exclusion of everything else.
Right.
It's a framing that sort of came to mind here while we were talking in there, is we talk a lot about safety and calibration and, like, making sure that everyone is not having a bad time. And I think maybe what we're talking about here is trying to take that further to, like, make sure everyone is actively having a good time, you know, like that, like, when you're just focused on your immersion and you're not focused on, like, supporting everyone. It's playing to lift. It's just playing.
Yeah, play to lift. Y'all, play to lift. I think that the key also is with playing to lift there is that it's about taking turns, right?
Mm.
And so there's this game that I adore, and this is, I'm going to give this a plug to, if anyone's interested in doing a big blockbuster LARP, check out Grimoire Productions in the Midwest. Huh? They do some of the best games that I have ever played in. And their whole way that they build things is that every character has one or two plots that they are the main character in. And then they have 3 to 4 others that they're the secondary supporting character in. And then a few others that they're the information can possibly get pulled in character in. And they do a beautiful job balancing this. They ran Lies and Liability, which was a Jane Austen style game. And the way they even build that and create the idea explicitly that you are the main character in your story, but you are also there to support the other main characters in the story. And the way they build that into the way they write and tell and plot really helps you recognize that you are taking turns in that experience of being that main character, having that immersion, having that experience. And then you pull back and then you give it to someone else, right? And then you support them in having that experience. And I think that's one of the things we can think about, like even as design, like how do we design games in which we recognize and build that in to how we are writing, of that everyone gets their moment to shine and then has that very explicit, but then I'm also here to support you and support you. Even in character, I am here to support you.
Yeah, totally. As we kind of head into the home stretch here of this episode, I really want to hear more from you about New World Magiskola, because I feel like this is sort of a foundational event in American LARP. And I read a lot about it sort of in the lead up to this series and researching it. And it also feels like it really connects to this topic. Like, I'm curious about the, like, what happens to everything that we're talking about when it is everywhere around you? You are like in the magic school. It's not just like I'm waving my wand around to cast the spells and embodying that way.
Yeah. And so New World Magiskola, as I said, was, just for folks who are not as aware of it, it came over from College of Wizardry, which is a LARP in Poland. And it really is taking a style of what's called blockbuster LARPs that are very popular and were very popular for a while in Europe, which is exactly what you said, 360 immersion, or at least attempting to be 360. Mm. And it itself, unfortunately, had some problems and had an ignoble death. But in existing and really bringing it to the United States, it spawned, like, if I ever had time, I would love to write an article about the level of connection that coming to the United States did and how that has spawned a new generation and connection of LARP across the United States. You really see its tendrils everywhere. But what does happen, I'd say, is it's kind of a two-edged sword, I'd say. If you are going for that feeling of immersion, like being surrounded by everyone's in costume, right? You're at a school, or in the case of like Lies and Liability, we were at this beautiful manor home, or like a lot of these things in Europe, you're at a fucking castle, right? Let's just be in a castle and do a castle game, because they've got castles there. It's even more of a shortcut into that embodiment, because it takes a lot less effort for your mind to jump there, for your mind to feel caught in a space, enter that circle. There's a lot less work that you have to do. And so it is a really kind of powerful experience if you really do want to feel part of a world. I think it can go a little too intense. Some people feel like that is what you need in order to create this feeling. There are people who are like, that's the only way to really to do LARP, is to have that 360 immersion. It's extremely intense. I love it, but like, I will go to bed and stop being unable to stop shaking because of the amount of adrenaline and emotional intensity and overwhelm from being in a brand new world and all this space and navigating it that you experience. And then you're like suddenly yourself again and you're like, shit, that was a lot.
My partner once said to me that I think you really enjoy emotional skydiving, and LARP and big box LARP like that in particular feels like it is the just how close to the ground can we get before we open that parachute version.
That is an incredible Well, I'm stealing that. because
I'll make sure they know. Yeah.
I too deeply enjoy emotional skydiving.
Yeah, and it's sort of thing where it's like, you know, sometimes when I'm playing a tabletop RPG, I just want to hang glide out of an airplane, right? And like slowly get back down safely to the ground. But like, yeah, sometimes, I don't know, I just want to like throw myself on the ground and see what happens.
Like, and you're just like, let's roll.
Yeah.
So I think they're beautiful. I love these games. I think that the again, they always have the danger then of people becoming so caught up in that either this is the only way to do it, this is the only way to feel immersed, this is the only way to LARP, or getting very upset if people have the barrier is of entry is high, right? Mm-hmm. Because these games are not cheap. Like, they're totally incredible, cool experiences. You've got a huge team of people
totally
putting these games on. I've been on the running side of them before. It's like 20 of us, right? 15, 20 of us running, writing, designing, buying fancy spaces. People are always like, oh my God, $900. How could you do that? And it's like, trust me, none of us are getting paid. So I think that it's a gatekeeping, can also be a kind of a gatekeeping thing. Like, can you afford $900 to play this LARP? And is your costume good enough? And
yeah,
all of that. And I don't want to ever say like, this is the one way to LARP, because that's just going to cut a lot of people out of a hobby.
Yeah.
I've seen games, unfortunately, that are so focused on getting all that 360 right that they're like, you can't wear glasses because they aren't period.
Whoa.
Yep.
Well, I feel like that's maybe a nice transition into the last thing that I want to say, which is, hey, we've been kind of like talking for quite a while here about like the scary side of all of this, right?
Talk too much about LARP. No, trust me, guys, LARP rules. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and like LARP rules, and every other episode this series is about how much LARP rules. And I think people will like get that. I think it's important to be aware of like, you know, what happens when you take some of these things too far. I think it's interesting to talk about that. But I also think to bring it back to the tabletop audience I am expecting for this series, like there's so much room in what we were talking about up top with the gnome hats, of like taking a really small dose of this stuff, hooking it to a tabletop game mechanic, and really reaping the rewards from that.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to get you anywhere near any of the rest of this stuff. And I don't know, I'm just really excited about that and doing more of that. I want to see more people explore in this huge pond we've been talking about with all of the highs and lows of it, and to take pieces back home to their games.
Right? I think it would be, I would super encourage folks to think like, what would it be like to just have like a shared diary that's all in character, and then you pass that to each other, and that's part of the game, right? That you hold that experience in your hand. What would it mean to base a mechanic around actually, like there are some games that have people actually physically giving each other letters.
Yeah,
that even there is so powerful to just have those. And I think there's so many other places we can go with a small bit of costume, a small bit of prop, a small bit of action or emotion that you can use to convey something that is really exciting. The other thing I was going to say is, if you're designing, like if you want to play around with embodiment a little bit, like actually standing up and acting a scene out, there's a thing in LARP we call glass box, or framing, in which you basically will have two people stand up and do a scene while the rest of the people watch. And it's usually reserved for kind of some kind of a special experience want to set it aside. And I was just thinking, maybe there are games out there that do this, but thinking about how you could use even those small little if they have to probably be in person, but stand up, do that kind of embodiment for a scene as a mechanic in an RPG, in which that is there to create this sense of, this is something different. This is something intense or distinct from the regular gameplay. Because as you said, when you do that, it does become a little bit more real. It does become a little bit more focused. So you're telling a game about dreams, or are you saying, and people go into the dream world, and anytime that they're in that dream world, they'll stand up and do a little scene that's embodied, or a flashback or something like that, that if, now I was just thinking, now I want people to embody the heist planning scenes from Blade in the Dark. So work on that. But just even playing around in that way, if you want to go a little bit further, how we can use that embodiment versus not embodiment to create these junctures and breaks in experience and levels.
Totally. That feels like a good place to end to me. Yeah. But is there anything else that you want to make sure that we get to talk about that we haven't gotten to?
No, really, LARPers, I think you're great. And I love LARP. That's my thing. And if you're interested in trying LARP or even like playing around with this as tabletop designers, yeah, there's a lot of great ones to start that are pretty easy and you can just pull off a line and play around with it. And I'd highly encourage you all to just try a little bit of embodiment and see where it goes.
Kate, thank you so much for being on Dice Exploder.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, fellow students, our homework today is, for your next RPG session, bring a little bit of a costume. You don't have to wear a whole outfit, just like a ring or a hat or a scarf. You know, if you're playing Yzeba's Bed and Breakfast, bring a mask and take Gertrude, I don't know. Get a witch hat, play Yzeba. Just a little something your character would wear, then report back. How's it feel? Thanks again to Kate for being here. You can find her on Blue Sky at Kate Plays Games. She's got some great Golden Cobra games in the archives there, and her actual play is Path of Glory on the Twitch stream Life in Neon. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky at Dice Exploder or on the Dice Exploder Discord. You can find my games at sdunwall.itch.io, including We Three Shall Meet Again, my new witchy asynchronous journaling game. Our logo was designed by Sporgery, our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray, and our ad music is Lily Pads by my boy, Travis Tesmer. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next time.